Episode number 10 of the Jets Collective is live on the Jets Collective YouTube channel. We are presented by Prize Picks. As always, my name is Jake Asman alongside Rich Samini from ESPN. And of course, our guy BT, Brandon Tierney from BT Unleashed. Gentlemen, a lot to get into with the New York Jets. There are a lot of talk in New York right now surrounds the New York Knicks. So we even have a way to tie in the Jets to the Knicks towards the end of our show. We'll get into that. But a lot to get into. Rich, I know you just got off the softball field, so you got to give us an update. How did you play? How did you perform? What do we need to know?
Well, we swept today. We had a good day. We swept. We won a doubleheader against a pretty good team through some intermittent rain. Fought through it. You know, real both comeback wins. Good day for the boys today.
Now, Rich, here's the question. So we talk about the Yankees a lot. Mets at this point aren't really worth talking much about, but Yankees have five automatic outs, and we know the names. Like, if you had to, who are you the comp to on the Yankees right now? I know you're not Judge, but I hope you're not McMahon. Who are you?
Well, today I had a good day, BT. So nice. Today I was, I'm just inconsistent with my hitting, you know, so I got to work on that. I had a good day today. I think I was like 5 for 6 today in the doubleheader.
Nice.
So, but last week, not so good. So it's just the consistency, man. I just have to. Today I had like a good vibe at the plate. I was seeing the ball well, but other days it's not so much. But the team won both, and we're back to 500 now. So that's the important thing.
I love it. BT, I know you're someone who's been a part of some radio wars in your career. Well, Rich Samini apparently is now a part of a podcast war. I was listening to Gangs All Here, the podcast that Brian Costello is a part of with the New York Post, to Tim, Ryan Sampson, and Frankie V. And listen to this shot that Kaz took at our own guy, Rich Samini.
Got a softball game tonight.
Ooh,
big playoff game. It's going to be a warm one. So,
Kaz, where got you playing out there?
He's not playing.
I don't play. I coach, Frankie.
He coaches.
Oh, I was going to say. Oh,
he's the coach.
I coach my daughter. Yeah.
I know Samini. Doesn't Samini play softball? Isn't that like
he plays in like an over 80 league, I think.
Over 80. Wow.
Rich, your thoughts?
Wow. I was not aware of that until you just played it. So that shot fired. I would challenge Mr. Costello to come and play in our league. there's some good ball players in our league. And, Brian's into the coaching thing. And I went through that myself. And BT, you're coaching too, right? You coach your kids. It's awesome. You know, my kids are older now, but I loved coaching them in baseball and wouldn't trade that for anything. So Kaz is going through that right now. I hear about his frustrations of coaching like 11 or 12 year old girls. And so I get it, but he should try to put on the gear himself and get out there. It's not as easy.
Yeah. That's a sideline. You know? That's a battle line that's drawn. Is Kaz coaching third? I mean, does he even have any?
No, he runs like the whole league. I think he runs the whole league in New Jersey there.
Okay. All right. Yeah. My money's on Rich, just for the record.
I'm backing my guy Rich every single time. Now, speaking of coaching, OTA start for the Jets with the veterans and the rookies this upcoming week. I know it starts this upcoming Wednesday, and the first open OTA practice, Rich, will be on Thursday. Give us a little feel for some of the storylines, some of the things that you're in particular going to be following closely next week when you get a chance to watch this current version of the Jets.
Yeah, exactly. Every year is like a new incarnation of the team, and I'll be out there on Thursday watching, and I'm going to look at what the offense looks like under Frank Reich. I want to get a glimpse of that, Geno Smith at quarterback, seeing some of this new talent that they brought in, like Kenyon Sadiq and Omar Cooper Jr., and seeing them combining with the holdovers, and again, this is all voluntary, by the way. I think we need to mention it. So it's not mandatory, so some guys might not be there. But Breece Hall back in camp, Garrett Wilson's been there the whole time. And so you just want to get a feel for how Geno's doing, how he's acclimating to the offense, different scheme for him, and just to see how Reich runs it. So that's, I'm an offense guy, so I'll be looking mostly at offense.
Me too. I saw some footage of Geno just kind of letting it rip a little bit over at the facility. Looks like he's in great shape. Not that he's ever been in bad shape. He's always been, a pretty good athlete and kept himself ready to go. But he looked even a little bigger in a good way. And listen, Rich, you'll communicate this to everybody for us. You'll be our liaison. Yeah, how he handles what Reich is asking him to do, that's important stuff. I want to hear about the leadership. I want to hear about, how verbal is he, what kind of direction, what kind of presence he has. I'm looking for that. It's always about the offense at this point. You know, can we score some points? Who are the new weapons? Let's go. Let's unleash it a little bit.
Yeah, the weapons is fascinating because they obviously added two guys in the first round that are pass catchers. Garrett Wilson is healthy, so hopefully he's there and he can start building that chemistry with Geno Smith. I'm with you, Rich. I think, you know, in the past, there's so much attention has been made to the Jet defense, and I'm sure we'll get there with David Bailey, of course, going number two. But I feel like all eyes for the Jets, at least early on, they're going to be on the offense and all the additions they made to that side of the ball.
You know, BT just hit on a really good word. He mentioned the word leadership. And I think that was missing last year at the quarterback position. Justin Fields, good guy, but very quiet. I don't know. I'm old school. I like my quarterback to be kind of a take charge guy in the huddle, to command the huddle, to be vocal, and just to be that guy. And that really wasn't Justin Fields' personality. I think Geno is more of that guy. I think he's grown into that as he's evolved throughout his career. And I'm really curious just to see how he interacts with the guys. He's 35 years old. He's the elder statesman on offense. So I think that'll come more naturally to him now. But that's one thing I'm going to have an eye on as I'm watching with my binoculars from the top deck out at Florham Park.
This is going to sound weird, and I realize it's going to get clipped, and it's probably going to lose context here. But people who hear the clip, go back and watch the whole thing. I remember Tiki telling me years ago that John Gruden used to say when he was with the Bucs and Rondé was there. And again, I don't want to get too graphic here, but he wants his quarterback basically coming out of the shower and not even bother putting a towel on, just letting it swing. Let everybody know who the man is, right? And, you know, Rodgers obviously is the man to an extent, but they just haven't had one of those swinging leaders in a while. So it's, you know, you want that swagger. You want that. You know, hey, listen, I'm the guy, and everybody's going to follow me. And I don't think anybody's disillusioned to the point where, you know, Geno's going to be a superstar. But there's something to be said for having a chip on your shoulder when you've had some success. And we've talked about this in some of the previous 9 episodes. Like, this guy's coming back to a place where it went woefully awry. His reputation was shot. He got punched in the face by a teammate. He's coming in with a chip. And I think it's going to be fun. And I can't wait to see the early returns. Let's go, Geno. Lead the towel at the door, bro.
I don't know where I can go with that.
To go anywhere. But John Gruden said. You know, Gruden came up with that, not me.
Yeah, it sounds like something Gruden would say. Look, Geno's got some scars, you know. I mean, he's coming back to a play. I think he wants to rewrite his legacy. Definitely got a chip on his shoulder. Different person than he was 10 years ago. Look, we all are, you know, we all mature and, you know, and Geno's evolved as a player. And I think he's really hoping to get back to what he was like 3 years ago when he was a Pro Bowl quarterback with Seattle.
You're staying with the quarterback theme here during OTAs. As of now, the Jets quarterback depth chart behind Geno Smith, it feels like it's truly wide open for Cade Klubnik to have a chance to win the backup quarterback job to Geno Smith. Where do things stand there, Rich? And all the eyes, of course, will be on Klubnik when he gets these reps. Do you think the Jets could be using OTAs and minicamp right till training camp to evaluate whether or not they actually need to add a veteran quarterback to that room with Geno?
Great point, Jake. You hit it right there. Now, they haven't come out and said it, but that's exactly what they're thinking right now. They're going to hold off on the older veteran guy as the backup and let these guys fight it out. And they're really high on Cade Klubnik. And I know the fan base is. I would caution the fan base to just tap the brakes a little bit. We've only seen him in rookie minicamp, but they're going to give him a runway here. You know, they got 10 OTA practices plus 3 minicamp practices. He's going to get a lot of reps. And, you know, I don't want to say it's his job to lose. I don't know if that would be an accurate characterization, but they're going to give him a chance to show that he could be that guy. And then I think they'll reassess when it's over and then decide if they want to go out and get that veteran. So, I would say the door's open for a Klubnik.
I think they're playing it well here. I mean, you know, if you're looking for a franchise quarterback, or even if it's like a one-year kind of a deal, to shake loose in the next month or two, that's just not very likely. Like, that doesn't happen around the NFL, but somebody that is a competent backup, like a Tyrod Taylor type, is eventually going to cut loose. And if the Jets look in and they get the intel with Klubnik and they deem he's not ready despite all the energy positive around him, well, they've got the ability and the avenue to pivot. I think it's great. Get the reps, get the information, understand, you know, the guy that you drafted. Let's see if it really mirrors what you thought he was going to be when you moved up 18 slots to get him. And I think it's a win-win. You get answers, and if you have to pivot, there's going to be an answer out there if you have to.
The hype for Klubnik only continues to mount because every time he appears doing something, Jet fans eat it up. This was from the NFLPA, you know, rookie meeting that they do or whatever it's actually officially called, where the guys wear the jerseys for the first time. You know, not too many fourth-round quarterbacks, you know, get a chance to be invited to this thing, I suppose. So here's Klubnik rocking the Jets helmet and the jersey for the first time. Looks like a franchise quarterback to me, BT.
I'm sold, man. I'm sold. I mean, it looks like a bowler. Hey, I know Zach Wilson couldn't spin it on his finger like Cade Klubnik just did. Look at that. Hey, go give me that spin. Hey, come on, flip it up. Look at the confidence. Yeah. Look at the poise. Look at the presence.
The number 10. That brings back Pennington memories. So, look, it's fun to mess around with this in May, but we've seen this so many times. At some point, he's going to start because that's what always seems to happen with Jet quarterbacks. So I hope he shows enough to at least maybe be a viable long-term backup. And to me, that's a win for any fourth-round pick that you take.
Yeah, I mean, just let him get reps. Let him play. Now, the one good thing he does have in his favor is he played a lot of ball in college. He had 40 starts at Clemson. So he has seen a lot of ball. He's been through some good times and some real tough times at Clemson, and we've talked about in past episodes, and I think that'll probably benefit him in the long run. It'll thicken his skin up and know, you know, Clemson is a fishbowl down there. I mean, to go through that is really tough. And so let him play. I mean, if you bring in a Russell Wilson right now, like, what's the point? Then he's just – Bill Parcells used to call those guys progress stoppers. You know, like, you know, right now he'd be stopping progress of a guy like Klubnik or a Brady Cook or a Bailey Zappi. If you have to go to Wilson, you wait till like early July or late June or something after all this stuff is over. Let the kids play. Let them play it out.
Yep. Yeah, I do like Rich. I think this has come up before too. But listen, I mean, if he had no adversity at Clemson, he wouldn't be a fourth round pick. We know that. That's part of the reason why he was able to get, you know, the Jets got him where they got him. But some of it was out of his control, whether it was the concepts, the schematics of the team that was under fire down there. And there's something to be said, like if you play at Ohio State, if you play at Michigan, if you play at USC, there's a different level of scrutiny. And down there, Clemson is like, it's like they're New York Yankees. So that callous skin, that hardened skin, you know, even if he has a rough day or two out of the shoot here, learning the playbook or just throwing a couple in the dirt or, you know, putting a few too high, I think he's going to be undeterred. It doesn't mean that he's going to be a great quarterback or even ultimately the backup, but he's not going to be overwhelmed. And you got to start somewhere. And I think that that's really good.
Well said. Before we move on to, you know, some more talk on the schedule, and we'll play you what Robert Saleh had to say when he was asked for the first time about facing his old team in the opener. Rich, is there any other storyline or any particular player that you are going to be honing in on starting this week when you get a chance to see Glenn in year two with his team?
Well, I mean, we've talked so much about the offense, you know, on defense. I just want to see kind of how they line up. You know, I think there'll be a 3-4 base team. That's pretty much the way they've talked about it. But I think they're going to be multiple fronts. I'm curious to see how, like, some of these new guys like Joseph Asai and Kingsley and Anambare, where are they going to line up? You know, David Onyemata, is he going to be on the nose or is he going to be like a 5 technique? Like what different spots are they going to use them? The thing I know, and I think we'll probably get into this, is DeMario Davis is going to be the quarterback of that defense. And he's going to be in the middle as the Mike linebacker. And I think that instantly makes the defense better just from a recognition standpoint and a pre-snap standpoint. You're not going to get anything by DeMario Davis. He's seen everything. He's played for 100 years. And so he's seen everything. And so he'll be another guy I'll be keeping an eye on.
Well, one thing about these workouts, guys, like there's no scoreboard. Of course, the Jets staff, they'll obviously come up with their data and they'll react to that. But what I love about this stuff, and you get it in NBA training camp, you hear it in spring training, like whether it's a Spencer Jones or like a Dominguez or a Lombard coming, and you hear the veterans react to that new wave of talent. Like, I can't wait to hear, you know, whether it's some of the defenders saying, hey, listen, Sadiq, man, this guy's just a different speed, which we know he is, but I'm going to be very interested to hear that. Or maybe Garrett Wilson talking about Pons. Hey, he knows what he's doing. Or even some of the veteran corners and safety talking about Cooper, how he runs his routes. Like, there'll be stuff that we can extrapolate that won't necessarily automatically translate to game production, but at least give us a roadmap as to whether or not early if the Jets really crushed the draft the way many of us think that they did.
Yeah, players know. Players yep. know players. And or like talking to Olu Fashanu and Armand Membu about David Bailey. I mean, you get your more interesting insights from those guys. You know, now that said, they're not in pads. And so it's, you know, the trench warfare, which sometimes you see in training camp on the days that they're in pads, is a little more heightened. But in mini camp, OTAs, it's basically like a passing camp. So you really can't tell a lot. But you can see a guy's first step quickness. You can see how he moves. This jumped out at me in rookie mini camp just watching David Bailey. It's like, okay, that guy jumps out. If I didn't know he was the second overall pick, you could see that his explosiveness, the way he gets off the ball is a little bit different from some of the other guys who were in the rookie minicamp.
100%. And by the way, this will be a conversation I'm sure we'll have leading right into the regular season. But when it comes to Bailey, how quickly do they get him on the field at the same time as Will McDonald? Because that was a huge talking point leading up to the draft. Can you play those guys together? I'm fascinated to see, and you alluded to this, Rich, how Aaron Glenn, who's now taken over the play calling on defense, how he decides to basically get his defensive players all out there, what the rotations look like. I mean, Bailey's got to play, hopefully, a lot. And Will McDonald, they picked up the option on him. He's going to be playing for a contract at the end of this year, I'm sure. So how those two kind of coexist on the field together is what I'm definitely going to be locked in on throughout OTAs into training camp.
Yeah, I mean, it's and you key word there, rotation. I think they have a lot of versatility and flexibility. And, you know, you're talking about four edge rushes with Bailey McDonald, Joseph Asai, and Kingsley Anambari. So I think those four guys will be getting the bulk of the reps on the edge. And Will McDonald may only be like a third down specialist. He may not be out there in the base defense. You know, I think they're going to try to limit his exposure there unless he shows that he's really improved against the run. So you may see Asai and Bailey as your two starting outside linebackers. That could be the way they go. And Mbari's, no one's talking about this guy. I checked with some of my Green Bay peeps. He's a good player. You know, he only signed the 1 year deal, but they gave him, I think, $9 million. He's not a bad player, and he will be in that rotation.
I got to tell you one thing that I don't want to hear, you know, whether McDonald's there or not in the base, whatever. If Bailey's not out there, you know, snap one, provided he's healthy, against Tennessee, I don't want to hear it, because this guy was, it wasn't taking 17, taking second overall. There was a lot of dialogue. We broke it down the first three or four shows. Reese, Bailey, Reese, trade out, whatever. He better be playing the first snap. I mean, like, I don't think that that's up for debate. I mean, on any level, he's going to be out there the first series, right, Rich?
You know, if I had to project a starting lineup right now, I would say probably Bailey and Joseph Asai would be your two edge rushers. I think inside you're looking at Harrison Phillips and Onyemata. And then Sweat and Harrison play the same position, so I'm not quite sure how they're going to do that. So,
what about Briggs?
Briggs.
Joan Briggs.
Briggs is more of a three technique, so they're going to be doing different sort of alignments up front, different fronts. They'll be really a hybrid front, so I'm curious to see how they do it. But I think Bailey, well, I'm curious now. If they don't get him out there on the first snap, BT's going to blow a gasket. So,
I mean, come on. Is that an unrealistic expectation?
It's not. He's the second overall pick. You know, yeah. You picked him for a reason. He can't be just a situational pass rusher. But, you know, there are other guys out there. You know, Anambari can play the run. So maybe he's out there with a sigh on first and 10 against the Titans. I mean, who knows? Ultimately, like I said a couple of episodes ago, I think Bailey needs to play about 65% of the time. That's a lot of playing time for a rookie defensive lineman slash linebacker.
You're watching the Jets Collective live on YouTube. If you're not watching live, make sure you're subscribed to the channel. Like the video. That's the thumbs up button that helps our channel continue to grow. Big thank you to everyone who tunes in each and every week. And you can also listen to the show. We post the full YouTube show as an audio-only podcast on Spotify, Apple, and iHeart Podcast. So we just brought up Tennessee. We know the Jets' opening opponent in Nashville is against their old coach, Robert Saleh. So when the Jets take on the Titans, there's going to be so much hype and buildup leading to the game. The Titans are having their OTAs this week. And this was Robert Saleh earlier today being asked about facing the Jets in week one.
What did you think when you got the schedule and saw the Jets as the first game? Is that personal, or how did you feel about that? No, you know, I've said it before. I'm appreciative for the Jets and everything that I had. It's been over a year and a half now. It's in the NFL. It's kind of like 10 years. But, you know, it's to be expected with the NFL, but didn't think anything of it.
I know Robert Saleh is a nice guy, but I don't buy that for a second. This has got to be personal for him, and I hope it's personal for the Jets as well, because we talked about it last week. This game is so important for the Jets to kick off the year.
Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, you know, he's going to play it like that. He's going to downplay it. I will say this. I will take you like a little behind the scenes here. So I'm at the league meetings in Phoenix at the cocktail party. And it's like on a Monday night and the whole league is there, all the coaches and GMs. And so I was with some Jet personnel, like upper Jet personnel. And we were just talking and BSing. And Saleh happened to be nearby and he came over and he hugged the people I was with, you know, like the Jets brass. He hugged them, you know, exchanged pleasantries. You know, there was no tension. It was all like, you know, feel good vibes, guys getting along. Now that said, Christopher and Woody Johnson were not there. Those are the guys I don't think he'd be hugging. So I think he gets along with most people in the organization. I think it's a Woody thing for him. I mean, yeah. That he was, how can I put this? To say he was blindsided by his firing would be an understatement. I mean, it threw him. It took him a while. It took him weeks to get over that. And I'm not sure he is over it. So I know what he's saying publicly. He's got to say that for his team and the public perception, blah, blah, blah. I think deep down, man, he would just love to stick it to Woody Johnson.
I don't think he's got to say anything. I mean, why does he have to say that? Honestly, I think that's a crock of shit. And that's one of my problems with Saleh, who's a good guy. But to me, like when the Jets hired him, you know, I had this image of him going ballistic on the Niners sideline, jacked. I call him the bald bull from the old Mike Tyson punch out game. Only a Tanner bald bull running the stairs. Looks like he could run through a wall. And then what I thought we were getting, you know, maybe behind closed doors, he was different, but I don't think he was necessarily to the players, which is a problem. Nonsense. Come out. Be real. Like, I know, I don't mean that you just harpoon the Jets organization. And I do believe that vitriol, if I can use that word, is much more reserved for Woody and Chris than the other people that Rich just told us that he's cool with. But, I mean, this is human nature, man. When somebody gets rid of you, and they're telling you, we don't believe in you, we don't think you're good enough. And when somebody tells me that, I'm looking to kick your ass in business. Like, so just be a little more raw. Be a little bit more honest. I was not buying that. And that, I think, is one of the problems that is preventing him from becoming possibly a really good coach. I don't think he's authentic to who he really is. Robert Saleh is a dog in a good way. That's a compliment. But he tries to skirt around it too much. Just tell us what you're thinking. I don't want to hear that if I'm a Titans fan. I want to beat the shit out of those guys. They fired me in the middle of the season unceremoniously. I'm coming after them. Let's go. Like, I just thought that was weak.
He doesn't want to create a headline in May. I think that's the bottom line. But I don't buy it for a second that it's not personal to him. I mean, they pulled the plug on him 5 games. He got 5 games of Aaron Rodgers. They were 2-3 when they fired him. So I'm sure it's personal for him. I hope it's personal for Glenn. I hope it's personal for the Jets. I hope it's personal for Tavondre Sweat and for Jarvis Brownlee, who were traded away by Mike Borgonzi, who's the GM of the Titans. I know those guys have had some posts talking about week one, how fired up they are, for lack of a better way to describe their social media posts. Like, that's what I hope. I hope the Jets come with that fire, because I know half the roster is former Tennessee Titans, or former Jets, I should say. They're going to be trying to stick it to the Jets. I hope the Jets are ready to go out there and get it done week one.
It'll be a fun little game. A lot of tangled webs and like different connecting, a lot of tentacles in this game. It should be a fun game.
And we're all going to be out there. Rich going to be covering it. Jake, I know you got something coming up. I think you're announcing it next week, I believe. I've got something coming up, another trip. I mean, we're all going to be out there. So, I mean, we can't be more fired up than the former players that are going against their former team. I mean, that's pretty basic stuff. So let's go.
Now, so the schedule came out last week, and we broke it down. We gave some takeaways, but we intentionally did not give an early record prediction because we wanted to have some time to really, you know, kind of think it through. So I'm going to put the schedule back up on the screen. BT, I'm coming to you first here.
Okay.
After analyzing the schedule, sitting on it for a full week, your early record prediction for the Jets in 2026 is what?
I've gone back and forth between 7 and 10, 8 and 9. Because it's the Jets, I can't give them the benefit of the doubt, 7 and 10 right now. And they're going to win week one. And then they're going to take the lumps against the North. And then they'll get going a little bit. I think the Jets win at least 7 games.
Rich?
Yeah, I got them at 6, 6 and 11. So it is what it is right now. I mean, it's a tough start to the schedule. I do think they will beat the Titans. I have them beating the Titans in the opener. Okay. And, you know, the Titans, I mean, they were picking so high for a reason, you know, and you know, they have a lot of talent issues as well. I know they spent a ton of money this offseason. Like, and I think they spent over $200 million in guaranteed money this offseason. And so, but I think the Jets are a little ahead of them. I think the Jets are going to win that one. But 6-11 is where I see the talent on this roster.
Jake? I'm right at 6 as well. I was at 6 going into last year, and I gave them, you know, too much credit all along. I had 4, and then Glenn hyping me up in training camp, you know, talking about how it's all coaching and taking all these veiled shots at Salah staff. I'm like, well, maybe he really does actually know what he's talking about. And the coaching was just so poor last year. And I know that I think that overall they've improved the coaching staff around Glenn, but it's just tough. When I break down a schedule, I always look at it like, how many games do the Jets enter with the advantage at coach and quarterback? And it's really tough. Week one might actually be one of those games potentially. So I just think week one's so important, because all of a sudden you win week one, I think you could talk yourself into, well, can we just win one of the next three between the NFC North opponents? Then you come home for Cleveland at New England, Miami, and the Raiders. It goes back to what Rich was saying last week. It's not the craziest thing in the world for the Jets to be 4-4 before that gauntlet of Mahomes, Allen, and Herbert in weeks 9 through 11. So I really think it goes back to, you know, just how much better are the Jets? Can Geno Smith prove that he is still a competent NFL starter if protected? I think so much of our questions with the Jets, we're going to have a real answer within the first 8 games of the year if you just look at the schedule.
I'm really curious. I think it'll be a good a reflection on Aaron Glenn is if they could spring a big upset or two, because,
yeah,
I mean – yeah. We know they're not as talented as some of these teams they're going against, and we know that. But spring an upset or two. Last year, the three teams they beat were Cincinnati, Atlanta, and
Cleveland.
The Browns. Cleveland.
So they beat three backup quarterbacks. They beat Flacco. They beat Kirk Cousins. And they beat Dylan Gabriel was starting for Cleveland then?
Yes.
I mean – and they weren't even really competitive against the really good teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, be an overachiever. You know, go into a game, you know, fight for 60 minutes and steal one or two. That's how I'll know that Aaron Glenn is getting through to these guys and that it's working. If you could steal a game or two where you're an underdog.
I think that's well said there, Rich. You know, it's funny, too, because that first game, like if the Jets win, we're going to be, you know, not maybe ecstatic or euphoric's a bit strong, but like, okay, here was a little stabilization early. Here's a win, and now we got to go through this gauntlet. But, Jay, kind of what you just said, I think the season's really going to be defined weeks 5 through 8. Now, I see the Vikings on the back end, but that's on the back end. And they're not a wretched team. They're just not one of the powers in the NFC North. But, you know, when you've got the Raiders and the Browns and Miami in that first matchup, you got to find a way to bag a couple of wins. And to your point, Rich, about stealing one within, you know, weeks 2, 3, and 4 against, and they'll be probably pretty big dogs. You know, it's not the sexiest thing in the world to talk about, but you're not going to beat a good team that's better than you if your kicker's a mess. Like, you're going to have a guy who's knocking the ball through the uprights. If you want to steal one of those games early, you're just going to have it.
Well said.
You know? Greg Zuerlein cost him a few games a couple of years ago.
He did.
They're going to have to figure that out. You know, they already cut the BYU kid who some people were high on, but he didn't have a great rookie camp. So I think they're searching right now. I don't think the kicker's on campus yet. Let's put it that way.
I got a question. I honestly don't know the answer to this. I think I do, but Rich, help us out. So they cut the kid from BYU. We knew that. And I was pretty excited. I was thinking maybe they draft somebody. They sign him. Okay. So the evaluation of a kicker, I mean, is it as simple as you know how far he can kick the ball? You already know that. Is it just, is it a technique thing? Is it what is the ultimate barometer to get rid of a kid that fast? Like, how bad do you have to be? How are they evaluating a kicker?
Well, I saw a coach the other day. It wasn't a Jet coach. It was someone was asked about the question you just brought up, BT. How do you evaluate a kicker? And maybe it was McVay. I'm not sure who it was. I saw it on a clip. Just kick it through the uprights. That's how you evaluate a kicker.
That's it.
You know, just make the kick. And, you know, they try to put some pressure on him in practice, you know, and it's not – obviously, it's not game-like. But, you know, they try to, you know, create a little competitive periods against each kicker against each other. And the kid, you know, he missed some in the rookie camp. You know, he just didn't have a good rookie camp. And they, you know, they gave him $19,000 guaranteed. You know, obviously that's a drop in the bucket, no big deal. But there's guys out there, you know, they'll find – they found Nick Folk on the eve of training camp or actually in training camp. So I'm not saying that that's going to cost them just yet. I think there's still a chance they'll find someone.
Man, it'd be nice to have Nick Folk back. That's the one move that Muji made this offseason. I didn't understand. I know, you know, maybe they didn't want to pay him as much money as what Atlanta offered him, but you have all this cap space. The guy was money. He's been money the last 3 years. Why mess with a good thing? I never understood that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. Every time whoever the kicker is, every time he misses a makeable kick, it's going to be like, they should have signed Folk.
Yeah. Yeah. They messed that one up. I mean, and it wasn't the kind of thing where, I don't believe it wasn't like with the Mets and Diaz, where the Mets wanted Diaz back and like they were just sloppy, and like for $3 more million, I know he's hurt now, but he went to the Dodgers. Like it wasn't like they just got beat out, like they just didn't want him back. Like they were already predisposed to that decision. No,
well, I think age had a lot to do with it, and Atlanta offered him, I think, $4-4.5 million guaranteed. And the Jets were not going to come close to that. I think they might have been $1 million off, you know. So if you're Nick Folk and, you know, Atlanta's offering you $1 million more guaranteed, you get a chance to kick indoors in a division where, you know, you're going to be kicking indoors in New Orleans, and you get some, you know, Carolina and Tampa, warm weather places, so more conducive for kicking. So I get it from Folk's perspective. If it were me, I would have threw in the extra million to just to keep him.
Amen. Was Muji ever pressed on that? I don't remember him saying much about that.
I don't think so. No. Huh. You know, I don't think that really came up. The timing of our availabilities was not such that – I mean, it's the kicker, so it's not – we have so many other questions. We have such a limited amount of time when we get him. You know, the kicker question – fell by the wayside. So maybe that's on us as reporters. Maybe we should have asked that one.
Muji, we know you're tuned in. You explain yourself.
Let's go, Muj.
And thanks for watching the Jets Collective. All right, so if Nick Folk not being brought back is not going to make our list of top offseason moves, let's hit on some of the moves the Jets have made, BT, that we like. Well, I know the graphic on the side says five, but for some time purposes here, because we got a bunch of things to get into, we'll do three. List your top three moves that the Jets we're able to make this offseason with OTAs getting underway this upcoming week.
I got you. All right. So to me, and not really in order, but I'll put this one first here. I think getting the Breece Hall deal done was important to me, you know, and I think it's important for the overall health of the organization, things we've talked about. Not that he's, you know, Barry Sanders or even Curtis Martin, but he is a top 10 running back. He was drafted by the team, and the Jets have been so bad at drafting guys, developing, getting that second contract. So I think it speaks to a better healthy situation, which, by the way, inspires other younger Jets. Oh, wow. All right. Breece is playing well. They took care of Breece. That's a good thing downstream. Number two, it's Geno. I mean, not that I'm expecting 35, 40 touchdowns, but the potential for a functional offense is finally there. I mean, one thing that we know, and the 40 times and the matchup issues the Jets could create, and I think Frank Reich's going to have a lot of options and a lot of buttons and levers to pull and push here. You know, I know this. If somebody's open, Geno's putting on his hands. Like, we know that. There's not going to be somebody running downfield that's got two steps on somebody, and he short hops it, or he flies it over his head by 10 yards where you could crawl in and get a touchdown. So Breece Hall, health of the organization, Geno, just to have a chance to sustain drives and get the ball in the end zone. And number three for me, I've gone back and forth with a couple of things, but I'm going to go with Kenyon Sadiq. I really am. I just, it has grown so tiresome watching the Jets and then watching almost every other team that runs out a modern NFL offense that's got a tight end that can beat almost anybody down the seam. He could beat some corners down the field, let alone linebackers who he can run past at 85% speed. So it opens up the playbook. It makes life easier for Garrett. It makes life residually easy for everybody. Breece Hall out of the backfield with the swing pass. Omar Cooper. I mean, it's just, It's really important. I think they did a lot of good things. Those three things really jumped out to me, though.
Rich, go ahead.
Yeah, a big one for me is Frank Reich. You know, having him as the offensive coordinator, an adult in the room, guy who's seen just about everything. I don't think he's going to be – he's such a mellow guy. I don't think he's an even-keeled guy. I don't think he's going to be affected at all by all the outside noise, which I think some Jets offensive coordinators in the past have been affected by. So I'm really curious and to see how he does. I just happened to be researching this yesterday. He's really an 11 personnel guy. You know, he leans heavily into 11 personnel. That's been his base offense, you know, the last couple of years he was coaching in the NFL. I think he's going to have to adjust a little bit because we want to see, like BT said, we want to see Kenyon Sadiq. So you're going to have to run a little bit more of the 12 stuff, you know, with two tight ends. But Frank Reich for me. The other one, I'm a quarterback guy, but I'm not going Geno. I'm going defensive quarterback DeMario Davis. No. To me, I mean, I know he's long in the tooth. He's 37 years old. I think he will, for the same reasons that I like Frank Reich coaching the offense, I like DeMario on defense. Just the seasoned, just the experience, the seasoned set of eyes, getting guys lined up, keeping guys upbeat when things are down. I think Jamie and Sherwood came up way short in the leadership department last year. And now I think Sherwood will benefit from playing alongside DeMario. So DeMario is going to run the defense. They needed an alpha running that unit. So that's DeMario Davis is my other guy. And to me, the other key, and my jury's still out on this one, but to me, Minkah Fitzpatrick has to be as good as we think he was. You know, I don't know if that makes any sense, but he's 29 years old. He's not old. He's still got some gas in the tank, but he has not been the same player the last couple of years. He's had three, I just wrote it down. He's had two interceptions in the last 3 years. They need a guy who can run the back end, who can get guys lined up and can make plays on the ball. We know the interception stat. We don't have to beat it like a dead horse. They need someone who can be a ball hawk back there. Just have a nose for the ball and make plays like you used to when you were getting six interceptions and making all pro. If they get that guy, I think that could have an unbelievable impact on the defense. So those are my three guys, Reich, DeMario Davis, and Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Great list by each of you, and mine's similar. So I just used my number one thing as adding veteran leadership. That includes Geno raising the floor at the quarterback spot. That includes DeMario Davis being the leader on that side of the ball. That includes Minkah, of course. Just the fact that a year ago, the Jets were just bereft of any veteran leadership that you could trust. Harrison Phillips became the spokesman for the team. And with respect to him, he was acquired the last week before the season started, right, in training camp. So yeah. The fact that he was such an important leader, God bless him, but they needed way more than just him. And I think they've done that with some of those additions we've already spoke about. The other thing that I loved was drafting two pass catchers early, coming away with Omar Cooper Jr. and Kenyon Sadiq. Just let's not try and act like, oh, well, we have A.D. Mitchell and we have Jeremy Rucker. We have enough. They'll take another step with another year of season. Just have too many offensive weapons where people are actually saying, do the Jets have that all of a sudden? I just love the fact that they were aggressive in getting both Sadiq and Omar Cooper Jr. You get Garrett, of course, another year of Mason Taylor, Breece being re-signed. Like, you could talk yourself into having a viable offense if Geno Smith is protected, which I think he will be. And my last thing is a coaching hire. I was going to go with Reich, but I'll throw in a different one to be different here. Hiring Carl Dunbar to coach the defensive line. You invested the number two pick in the draft on a defensive lineman. The knock on him is that he's not great against the run. Well, I heard former Jet Legay Duzable, who played for Dunbar with the Jets, say that Dunbar helped him become better against the run than he did as a rusher. So I think the fact that they made the investment in Bailey, at least they have a really good, proven defensive line coach that can help him his rookie year. Same for a guy like Tavondre Sweat and some of the other guys that we're hoping to take a jump, like Will McDonald now going into his fourth year. So adding veteran leadership, drafting two pass catchers, and hiring Dunbar for the defensive line were my top three.
That's a good list right there. I'm getting even more excited. That's a lot of good things, honestly.
I like the Dunbar one, Jake. That that one slipped my mind, but you're right. He's a proven coach, and especially in a 3-4, and he gets guys to play for him. So I think that's a good one.
Love it. If you're watching live, hit the like button, subscribe to the channel. We got over 300 people tuned in right now. If you guys have questions, write it in. We'll do Q&A at the end, super chats. We'll definitely cut the line, and we will get those on the show. So before we get to a little Nick discussion here, we are presented by Prize Picks. BT and Rich, I put together a Prize Pick lineup for tonight's game two of the Knicks. Use code HMA, put $5 in. You get $50 instantly. Carl Anthony Towns. More than 3.5 assists. He has averaged over 5.5 his last five games. He had 5 in game one. OG Anunoby, I think he shook the rust off coming off the injury. I like him to score at least 16 points later. And then you got to pick one for the Cleveland side. Sam Merrill, he's averaged 2.5 threes per game over his last 5. And I think he's going to hit at least 2 later. So this is a prize pick lineup that I put together. Everyone can fade me, tail me, make your own. Just download the Prize Picks app, click the link in the description, and use the code HMA. And more importantly, let's go Knicks. So if you're watching the game tonight, make your own Knicks theme lineup with Prize Picks.
I got something for you here. So I saw too many times the other night, Merrill and others were wide open. Like amazing win, all-time win. But the Knicks defense was very scattered, and guys were clanking pretty much all game for Cleveland. So I think Merrill's going to be over. So I would roll with you there. I'm going to go the over. I'm going to fade OG. Now, we did see that little, and I love him, but we saw that little burst when he tried to throw down that two-handed dunk where he really exploded. He got fouled. So I think he's healthy, but I think Cat's going to be more of the feature tonight with Jalen on offense. So I'm going to go over with the assist. To me, with Cat, that's pretty easy. Slightly under with OG, and then slightly over with Merrill on the triples.
If you want Cat, BT, on Prize Picks right now, Carl Anthony Towns, 17.5 is his number if you want to go more.
I'm going over. Cat. Over. He's going to have a big game tonight. I think we're going to see 22, 23, 5-6 assists, 11, 12 rebounds. I know it's not a great matchup because Mobley can move and he's long and you know, Cat's not the kind of guy who's just going to post him up like it's 1983 and do the old school drop step. But I think he's going to figure it out. He's got to get his act together a little bit. I mean, if the Knicks are going to win a championship, let alone get by the Cavs, Cat's got to start playing like he was for the last month and a half or so. I think Cat's over 20 points.
Yeah, my picks are exactly the same as BT. I'm just under on with OG Anunoby. The Cavaliers did a really good job of restricting Cat's facilitating ability the other night. He was really not playing that same kind of position, distributing as he was. I guess they made some sort of, and Mobley too is just a really big athletic guy. I'm sure that had something to do with it as well. But I think they will, the Knicks will adjust a little bit and make Cat more of a feature guy tonight. So I'm going over on that assist.
Now, if the Knicks lose, we only have one guy we could blame, BT.
Who?
Samini Jinx. Ooh. Rich tweeted, the Knicks are going all the way. It's meant to be. So no pressure, Rich, but the entire city of New York is counting on you to be right here.
Yeah, my emotion may have gotten the best of me there. I wasn't thinking about how good the Spurs or Thunder are right now. But I do think the Knicks are a really good team, and they just seem to be having that destiny thing going. So let's go Knicks.
But then, no doubt, go Knicks. But that's usually our department. Like, let me and Jake like hijack stuff and get nonsense. You got to be that measured, sage, you know, wise, stable voice there, Rich. Let's not swerve out of the lane, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my sport, so I go out of my lane a little bit. When it has to do with the NFL and the Jets, I'm a little more reserved with that stuff. You know, you got to approach it as a journalist, you know, 50-50. But, hey, I can root for the Knicks openly. No problem at all.
Oh, baby.
Love it. Well, speaking of the Knicks, I was thinking a lot about this, and I've referenced this on shows I've done, whether it be on YouTube or on the radio. You know, there's always been so much talk about, well, Woody Johnson of the Jets, and he's the worst owner in sports. But it's not that long ago that Knicks fans were chanting, sell the team at James Dolan. He's the same owner that has, you know, overseeded this stretch where the Knicks, until really the last 4 or 5 years, were one of the worst franchises in sports. So I was curious, Rich, because obviously you've been around the Jets as long as anyone ever. Like, what do you say to the Jet fan out there who just thinks, hey, this team could never win with Woody when, well, they said the same thing about Dolan with the Knicks, and Woody Johnson was the owner of a team that made the playoffs 6 times in his first 10 years that he owned the franchise starting in 2000. Like, they were a half away from the Super Bowl twice. So I hear it all the time, and I'm sure you being around the team, Rich, people are always asking you about Woody. You know, what do you say to those who say, well, the Jets can never win because, you know, Woody Johnson owns their franchise?
You know, they came within maybe one drive of making the Super Bowl in 2010. You know, had that Steeler game in Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship, had that game been another a minute or two, you know, I think maybe the Jets would have pulled that one out. So Woody had it pretty good for that first decade. Like you said, six playoff appearances. He had a pretty good decade there. Not so good the last 15 years, obviously, longest playoff drought in North American sports. And so, I'm a believer in the Parcells adage. You are what your record says you are. And Woody Johnson's record at 25 years as an owner is I think in the bottom five of the league. So, but that doesn't say you can't win. If you get the right formula, if you get the right quarterback and you get the right coach and things can just click. I mean, I don't think James Dolan changed his ways a lot. He hired the right people.
Bingo.
You know, you hire the right people who then in turn hire the right players and then it can happen. So, more power to the Knicks for finally figuring that out.
Yeah, and they tripped all over themselves. You know, the Fishers, the Hortisex, Phil Jackson coming to do a job he never did before and running the show rather than coaching. You know, I don't believe in jinxes. I know that some people do. I don't. I believe, Rich, what you just said, you nailed it. You know, the connection between ownership that is successful and deemed a failure is decisions in terms of who you hire and obviously spending money, which Woody does. We can't quibble about that. But when you hire people, empowering them early, but also staying out of the way. Now, that's one thing that I think Woody has had an issue doing at times. So did Dolan, though. Dolan was really the one, you know, that kind of stepped in and torpedoed that. When the Knicks got Carmelo, like, they could have waited and done it over the offseason. Instead, they gave up 3, 4, 5 players, whatever it was, and the core of the team changed a little bit. So to me, it's not that Dolan suddenly got better and he completely changed his ways. He finally hired the right person, like Leon Rose, let him cook, stayed out of the kitchen, and here we are. And I hope that eventually Woody's going to – and I do think he did that with Muji. I really believe that. Like, the one difference, though, and Rich, you point out the early success with Woody, and that's undeniable. That's on his resume. But he inherited a pretty good culture, right? Yeah. And as he got further and further and further away from that, and like the Herms, and like they were a competitive franchise, and even Al Groh was pretty good the 1 year in 2000. Like, as he moved away from that and he had to make every decision on his own, he's proven to be basically incompetent, with the exception of Rex. And listen, I believe things can change, but with the Jets, they don't change until they actually change. We know that.
About a year ago, I was with Joe Namath, and I asked him, I'm like, hey, Joe, you know, you heard that stuff about how you sold your soul to the devil so the Jets could win a Super Bowl, and now you curse them forever. I'm like, what do you make of that whole narrative? And he just started laughing. You know, he goes, I've heard it. He goes, I think I saw a skit on TV one time. Like, he knew the whole background with that whole sold your soul. And he goes, look, it all comes down to hiring the right people, getting the right coaches and players. And I expected him to say that. I didn't honestly say, yeah, I'm the reason, you know, I sold my soul so we could win Super Bowl III. But he had a big old laugh about it. And I thought it was kind of funny, but I do think some Jet fans, you know, the ones I've interacted with, you know, I think they believe there's some truth to that.
They do. I get it all the time from people, the Namath curse. And like, my retort is always what you said, Rich. It comes down to Woody hiring the right people and letting them do their job. The one thing Dolan did, he hired Leon Rose, and Leon Rose was smart enough to hire a proven floor-raising head coach. And Tom Thibodeau, the Knicks are not where they are right now if Tibbs doesn't stabilize things. And that first year, they grossly overachieved, 140-something games, made the playoffs. Sure, they lost in the first round, but they raised their floor. They made, you know, the Knicks a destination again as they started to build.
Yeah.
That was my big thing a year ago when they did the coaching search. It wasn't being anti-Glenn. It was just anti any first-timer, especially a defensive-minded guy. You know, if it doesn't work out with Glenn, I really hope if there's an opportunity to get a Tomlin or a McDermott or Kevin O'Connell, Shane Steichen, whoever, you know, the top guys are a year from now, that the Jets really value the experienced coach. And it's not Adam Gase is the only experienced coach that Woody Johnson has overseen since he's owned the team.
Well, we'll see how it goes. You know, Woody's been in a slump lately, so maybe he turns it around a little bit.
Well, and guys, by the way, think about curses, right? I don't put any stock in that. But I guess on some level I understand why some do, because you have to contextualize the torture. I get it. I do. But the Boston Red Sox, curse of the Bambino, the strongest curse in the history of sports, not just baseball, That was reversed in a massive way. And even the curse of the Billy Goat, the old story from the Chicago Cubbies, right? Where the owner or one of the, I don't know, whoever it was, wouldn't they he brought his goat to the World Series. They kicked him out. He said, you're never going to win a World Series again. And then, yeah, they had to go through the Bartman stuff, but they eventually won as well. So I don't want to hear about curses. I want to see smart people hired, and then I want to see some wins.
You know when I really started thinking about a curse? The night Rodgers tore his Achilles. I'm like, this can't be happening. I mean, sorry to bring up the bad vibes, but I'm like, what other team does this happen to? Yep. I mean, it's like he runs out with the flag. There's so much hype. It's like everything's great. You know, Aaron Rodgers. The Jets got Aaron Rodgers. And boom, first series tears his Achilles. And so that's why I'm thinking, this curse thing, maybe there's something to it.
That was the first time I started to think maybe there is something to it.
I mean, I'd be lying. That tested my boundaries too. Like yes. He didn't complete a pass. I'm like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of, like, you know, bad things in Jet history, this was interesting. Before we get to the Q&A, this was Bill Belichick on Pardon My Take earlier this week. Rich, I'm fascinated to get your thoughts on this. He doesn't very often open up about his thoughts on the Jets and basically being the head coach twice and not actually coaching them twice. But this was Belichick on rejecting the Jets and the infamous napkin resignation letter.
Did you ever think, like, maybe I should have grabbed, like, an envelope or, like, a half-torn sheet of paper to write my resignation letter on?
Yeah, in retrospect, I don't think that was the greatest choice.
Yeah. I don't know. It got the message across.
It certainly did. Yeah, it did in a very I don't know. It wasn't real. It wasn't the classiest thing I've ever done. I'll say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean,
I was in a mood at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it probably worked out for you though.
Well, I mean, I had worked for Modell, and the two trains that were coming down the tracks were Dolan and Woody Johnson. And I just felt like don't feel comfortable working for whichever one of those guys ends up with the team. Nothing personal. I just, you know, I'd had a bad experience, and I was either I'm going to work for a good owner or an owner that I felt comfortable with, that was shared a vision with, mm-hmm. or I'm not working for that.
Yeah. You know?
We know what ends up happening. He goes and coaches the Patriots, and the rest is history, as they say. But Rich, you obviously were on the beat covering that time period in Jets history. What do you make of those comments there from BB?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. I think he's been pretty consistent with that. I mean, at the time, he didn't really say when he made that announcement with the, by the way, it wasn't a napkin. It was a loose leaf paper. And a few years ago, when I did a story on the 20-year anniversary of that whole day, I was on a mission to find out who had that piece of paper, you know, because I figured someone kept it, right? And I tried so many different people, and I could not find, like, the person who had it. I don't think anyone kept it, is what, because I think that'd be awesome to have that piece of paper. But I mean, he said this before about Woody and Dolan, and I find it interesting that last year he called the Jets looking for a job when he was out of work, or 2 years ago, you know. He did call the Jets. Actually, he called Mike Tannenbaum, who was, you know, the point man on the whole consulting, the coaching search. And so he did call for that, and that really didn't go anywhere. But, yeah, Belichick, and at the time, I get it. You know, he came through it was a train wreck with Modell in Cleveland, and he knew he had only one more chance to become a head coach, and he wanted it to be the right situation. He knew what he had in Cleveland, I mean, New England, because I think he knew through intermediaries that Kraft wanted to hire him. And Woody Johnson and Dolan had no track record. He obviously did some research ahead of time, didn't like what he was hearing about those guys. I also think the Parcells factor may have been, you know, Parcells sticking around and looking over his shoulder. And I think Belichick was a little concerned about that. You know, their relationship, which is fine now, wasn't in the best place at that particular time, so I think that was a factor as well. And I'll just add this, and that was a good team he walked away from.
Yeah,
the Jets had a really good team. They were coming off a 9-7 season, and they were 9-7 under Bill.
Yep.
And Vinny was coming back from his injury, and they had Hall of Fame players, you know, Mawai and Curtis and Keyshawn, Krabbet. They had a really good team, and he walked away from that. And the following year, when the Patriots made the Super Bowl, I'll never forget this. They won, you guys recall, they won the AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh. They upset the Steelers, and I walked into Belichick's dressing room after the game. Here it was, first Super Bowl appearance as a head coach. And I walked in, and I asked him about leaving the Jets, and I'll never forget what he said. He goes, this would have never happened if I stayed with the Jets. And he just felt like the other one was Steve Gutman, the president of the Jets at the time. Bill had no respect for him for whatsoever. And he goes, this would have never happened if I stayed with the Jets. I had to get out. And so I remember that vividly, talking to him alone in the locker room after that win. And who knew that he'd go on to win all those Super Bowls at that particular time. But it's a fascinating chapter in Jet history.
It's fascinating, except it's never fascinating hearing him speak. I mean, he's like verbal Ambien. I mean, good God, right? People are boring. Yeah. This guy is just boring. It's ridiculous. Now, I mean, listen, Belichick to me, not that it's like a constant debate. Most people at this point say it's either Belichick or Lombardi, greatest head coach of all time. I think it's Parcells, whatever. That's my opinion. But think about the difference. You bring up Parcells and their relationship and the shadow, perhaps, of Bill looking over Belichick, right? Well, Parcells was able to flourish when the Giants were coming off one of the most pathetic decades, the 70s, of any football team ever. Then he comes to the Jets off a 3-13 year with Leon Hess, all due respect, horrendous owner, good guy, awful, and a 1-15 season. They win 9 games, then they win 12, and they would have won the Super Bowl. I think we all think that, whatever. Then he goes, and before that, the Patriots were not in a healthy spot. They had a shitty stadium. They weren't a real winning team. And even going to Dallas, not that he won the Super Bowl there, but obviously Jerry and the ownership, a little bit of everything. Like, for Belichick, and it's his right to be that selective. I'm not mad at him for doing that. But to me, the ability for Parcells to plow through and elevate immediately everywhere he went, no matter who owned the team. And we got Belichick trying to cherry pick the best situation because he was scared of Dolan or Woody Johnson. I'm done with it. I'm so tired of hearing about Bill Belichick. Stick in North Carolina, get $20 more million of NIL so you can actually win. Nobody wanted you last year. You called the Jets, you were begging. Enough of Bill Belichick. I'm actually tired of hearing him talk. I'm so uninterested in what he has to say at this point. I'm sorry. I just don't care.
I just have never understood why he has this hatred for the Jets when the Jets, they gave him an opportunity to be a head coach. Like, they offered him the job. Like, no one was hiring him at that point. Parcells basically was able to help resurrect his coaching career by bringing him with the Jets after Kotite was of course gone, and they turned things around. I've never understood why he goes out of his way to run up the score on the Jets, and he has such a hatred for the Jets. Like, again, it's not like he ever actually worked with Woody Johnson. He barely knew Woody Johnson. Woody didn't even officially own the team at that point. I don't think when he walked away.
No.
And plus, Leon Hess gave him a $1 million bonus to stick around for that last year. So he pocketed $1 million. And I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I agree with a lot of what you guys are saying, but from the Belichick perspective, he was contractually signed to become the head coach after Parcells left. And he felt that he made that agreement to Leon Hess. And then when Hess died, he felt that that agreement no longer was valid. And of course, and this is, I think, the reason, one of the reasons why he doesn't like the Jets is because, you know, the Jets took him to court and they fought him on it. And the Jets eventually won. He couldn't get out of the contract until they negotiated the compensation with the Patriots. And also, let's not forget Spygate. The Jets blew the whistle on Belichick with Spygate, and that is really the biggest blemish on his resume. And I can tell you, it was probably a factor in the reason why he didn't get in the Hall of Fame this year. I voted for him. I thought he should have got in even with the Spygate, but I think the Spygate has left such a scar on him that he will never forget it. And that's why his relationship with Eric Mangini, I think, is irreparable. I mean, those guys were as tight as two coaches could be, and that destroyed their relationship, and I don't think Belichick will ever forget it.
But to Jake's point, and it's an outstanding one, the hatred in the sporting sense developed way before Spygate. I mean, so it's on a timeline. It's not consistent.
I just think that he again, I don't agree with what he's saying, but he feels the Jets made him jump through hoops to get out of his contract, he felt that they should have just said, go ahead, go to the Patriots right after you, you know, and he had a valid contract with the Jets. So I don't blame the Jets for enforcing that contract. And in the end, they got compensation. They got a first round pick out of it, which I think turned out to be Sean Ellis, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, from the Patriots perspective, for Robert Kraft, that might have been the greatest trade in NFL history, giving up a first-round pick for a Super Bowl, you know, winning coach. So it's fun. You know, it's interesting. I mean, here we are 20-something years later, 25 years later, still talking about it. And it's just a lot of acrimony that I don't think will ever go away.
Yeah, go lose to Wake Forest by 10.
Yeah, I'm with you, BT. I mean, my God. But it just – it's crazy. And his first year in New England, they were 5-11. So it's not like he immediately had success. And then they win the Super Bowl out of nowhere in 01. And obviously the rest is history there. We'll get to the Q&A at the end of our show. But our other sponsor today is SeatGeek. Use Collective 10 if you're buying tickets to any sporting event. Knicks, Yankees, Mets, any concert, you name it. Let me tell you about SeatGeek. And then we'll get to your Super Chats to wrap up this episode of The Collective.
I'm fired up for the Yankees and the Red Sox on June 7th. It's one of the best rivalries in sports, and I'm looking to buy tickets to go to the game. That's why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout-out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app with more than 70,000 events listed, including concerts, festivals, and, of course, sports. I use SeatGeek for all the games I go to. I love using it because it's just easy to use. You just search Yankees and boom, check out the game on June 7th. You can see all the seats. And because SeatGeek is MLB's official ticket marketplace, your tickets are fully guaranteed and instantly available in your account after purchase. SeatGeek also rates every ticket on a scale of 1 to 10. So you just look for green dots. Green means good. Red means bad. Use our promo code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account.
I want to shout out SeatGeek because I actually use SeatGeek to lock in my tickets, BT, for Section 110 in Nashville, Jets-Titans in the opener. So we'll be right behind the Jet bench. Shout out to SeatGeek for saving me and my friends some money.
If I remember, that's actually the hot side of the field. I do remember that. The sun, I was getting blistered, man. And it's going to be hot down there in September. Great spot, though, man, right behind the bench. And I remember I was actually, we were talking about Robert Saleh before. I'm tweeting. I'm like, because I was already kind of done with Robert Saleh, even going into that game. I'm like, the guy's doing nothing on the bench. Like, he's interacting with no one. So you can see everything. You can see who's dialed in. It's a great spot. Good job.
Can't wait. Shout out to SeatGeek for sponsoring our show. A little Q&A at the end here. Super Chats. We'll get you in. Let me shout out a couple new channel members. Thank you to Scott for becoming a Jets Collective channel member. Another way to support the show. And shout out to JoJo as well for becoming a channel member. Two Super Chats right here. This one is from the big fella who wants to know, does Arian Smith make the team with the signing of Tim Patrick? Any rumblings on a possible linebacker addition? And then big fella throws in, Cade York sucks. Can we please sign a kicker? So, Rich, I'll start with you on the Tim Patrick signing, how that impacts Arian Smith and the rest of that wide receiver room, and then we can head on the addition at linebacker.
Yeah, I would say probably yes on Arian Smith. I still think he's among the best six receivers on the team. Now, it's not the deepest position on the team. We know that they signed Tim Patrick as veteran insurance, but Arian Smith is really good on special teams. He's a good gunner. So he has value there. And the question is, I think your top three receivers will be Wilson, Mitchell, and Cooper. The question becomes, who's your number four? I mean, usually you go to the game, you need four receivers, and then you carry a fifth guy who's a special teams guy. So you got Isaiah Williams, who's really a special teams guy as well. Arian Smith really needs to make a significant progression as a receiver this year. He was really raw last year and really showed very little as a receiver. He's a guy who needs to make a marked improvement.
I mean, I'm not investing much in him at all. I mean, if it works out, great. If he's here, great. If not, I don't think it's going to really be incredibly consequential. The linebacker thing, and Cade York, I hear you. What about Bobby Okereke? I mean, I'm not saying he's a stud, but did you guys see the video of him working out the other day? I know he lost like 15 pounds. He's really lean. He can move a little bit. He's a veteran. And any kick the tires on Okereke at some point, guys?
I love that suggestion. Matt Milano, I know, is also out there. And anyone saying, oh, another older linebacker. I mean, they signed DeMario Davis, so you can't tell me that a guy who's 31 is too old when DeMario was signed and he's going to be 38 at the end of this football season. So I'm with you. I feel like if something happens to Davis or Sherwood, they are so thin at that position group. And last year we felt like they were thin at defensive tackle, and Muji made the two trades for Phillips and Briggs. So I almost wonder if maybe the Jets could be identifying a free agent linebacker or maybe someone on a different team they could try and acquire at some point.
The only thing would, I think if they, Matt Milano, if you bring in a linebacker, you want him to have some special teams ability because he'd, you know, be carrying him as a backup. Backup linebacker has got to be a special teamer. I don't know if Matt Milano at this stage of his year career is going to play special teams. They have Walker and Mauanoa as their backups right now on the inside. So, you know, could they, Walker played a lot last year. He's an older type veteran. So I guess they need someone. I don't know if it's like a top of the top to-do list for sure.
Joe the Jet with a super chat. Thank you, Joe. If Geno takes us to the playoffs, would that make Geno's return to New York the greatest redemption story in NFL history? I mean, Sam Darnold just won a Super Bowl. So I'd say that's pretty impressive. I mean, it'd be an incredible New York sports story as far as like one of the more unlikely things to happen. The Jets had the longest playoff drought in professional sports of a guy that, you know, lost his starting job a decade prior because his own teammate knocked him out, actually was the guy to come back years later and lead him there. That'd be an incredible story. He'd get a comeback player of the year votes. That's for sure. He might win the award.
It would be a good story. It would be ironic, I think, more than like some transcendent story. Now, if you get, I mean, let's not go nuts here. I know it's early, but I mean, like if the Jets won the Super Bowl, I mean, that's next level, impossible to really even wrap my brain around at any point right now. But I mean, if he snaps the 15-year hex, I mean, Geno's going to have a special place in the hearts of Jets fans. I'm getting tired of always seeing the tweets and on screen, longest North American team play. Just if he's the guy that just deletes that from the computer for CBS and for Fox and ESPN, I will be eternally grateful, guys.
I'm all about the good stories. So if that would be a tremendous story if that ever happens. And, you know, Geno's got a lot on the line here. You know, he's 35, which, you know, he's not over the hill yet for a quarterback. So he's still got some years left. And who's to say, you know, he has a good year. He could re-sign with the Jets and be the bridge guy. You know, I do think they will draft someone next year pretty high in the draft. But you're still going to need a veteran guy, a veteran mentor. And, you know, Geno could be that guy. So, you know, Geno's got a lot on the line this year. You know, he's got legacy. He's got his next contract. So it'll be fascinating to see how it goes.
Eric with a super chat. His question is attached right below it. Thank you, Eric. He says, question, are the Jets higher on Brady Cook than the media is? I don't think he was terrible last year for having minimum reps. He at least looked not afraid to be out there like Fields. I'd push back a little bit on him not looking terrible, Eric. That said, Rich, do the Jets like Brady Cook maybe more than fans and media realize?
There's no way. Come on.
No. I mean, statistically, he was the worst quarterback in the league last year. I mean, I could throw out the stat. I mean, I've looked every different way. It didn't go well. He was thrown into an extremely difficult situation. An undrafted rookie starting four games at the end of the year on a team that, you know, was just basically tanking toward the end of the year. So there was an extremely difficult circumstance. But, you know, he didn't play great at all. He had a flash. Remember the Jacksonville game where he threw the touchdown pass early in the game?
Yes.
And you thought for a second, maybe. And then the Jets couldn't stop a nosebleed that day. And, you know, Wilkes ended up getting fired. But, no, I think it's all about Klubnik now and trying to develop him as their backup quarterback.
I think if he's in the NFL in 2 years, I think I would be surprised. And no disrespect, I really don't mean it that way, but it's a bottom line business, and he's not a great athlete. He doesn't have a great arm. He looked overwhelmed. That's a lot of young kids do, but I didn't see anything. I just didn't see anything.
This was the greatest Brady Cook pass I've ever seen. Like, I remember watching this.
Let's go.
This is what we were dealing with last year. I don't know, watch Brady Cook. God, Klubnik's going to be better than Brady Cook. I feel confident in that. So we have that. Before we get out of here, reminder, get your tickets to Gangrene Beach Club. We're going to be hanging out in Atlantic City on July 11th. Tickets are going. They're just $25. Get you in to HQ2, which is a beautiful property in Atlantic City. Come hang out. Me, Rich, BT, myself, Fireman Ed's going to be there. A bunch of members from the Jets beat, some of your favorite Jet content creators, and some special guests to be announced. Perhaps a former Jet or two will be in the building. We will announce that when all that gets confirmed. Again, you just go to gangrenebeachclub.com and you can get your tickets. I will spare you guys from showing any photos of us in AI edited speedos for this week's episode.
No, don't do that.
I mean, we actually looked good. So it's really the opposite of the way we really look. So yeah, I took it as a compliment. I didn't mind it.
Love it. Gangrenebeachclub.com. You can get your tickets there. Looking forward to being out in AC at HQ2 on July 11th. Gentlemen, another fun episode of the Jets Collective. Next week, we'll have some takeaways from OTAs to react to. And Rich, let us know how your war with Brian Costello at the Jet facility goes. Hopefully you knock him out.
Yeah, I got a score to settle with him, so I'll keep you posted.
BT, let's go Knicks.
Let's do it, baby. Knicks in 4, Knicks in 5. Let's go.
Love it. Everyone hit the like button before you leave. Subscribe to the channel. And again, check out the audio version if you want to take us on the go, wherever you get your podcast. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring. Another episode of the Jets Collective is in the books. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will talk to you next week. See you, everybody.